scribes. The smile on his face is anything but friendly as he pushes off the desk, clasping his hands behind his robes as he nods at me. We usually start with first years, Professor De Vera says, cutting a look at Colonel Markham. Finishing the details we can give you about the Afbeen attack. It occurred a little before midnight. While 9 of the 12 dragons stationed there were still out on their patrols. The enemy totals were around 24 from what we can tell, and they were defeated by the 3 present dragons, with help from the infantry. 2 griffin riders made it into the lower level of the outpost before being caught and killed. Shields, Taren growls, and I build them back up. I didn't even notice they'd slipped. They should be like clothes at this point. He lectures, snapping a little more than usual. I'm sorry? Surely you'd feel a breeze were you to forget putting them on. Point made. Isn't that where you guys were sent? Rhiannon asks. Afbeen? I nod, hoping none of those flyers were the ones who fought with us at Resen. The first years start when it's time for questions. What was the Griffin's chosen formation for the attack on Afbeen? A typical V. Are the 2 attacks connected? We have no reason to believe so. The questions go on, and none of them are getting to the heart of the matter, which makes me look at the cadets below us with a healthy dose of skepticism that they aren't the critical thinkers they need to be. Then again, maybe the other years felt that way about us last year. Finally, De Vera opens the floor to the other years. Rhiannon's hand shoots up and De Vera calls on her. Do you think it's possible that the enemy knew the outpost had been emptied for war games and was trying to take advantage of the situation? She asks. Exactly. Professors De Vera and Markham share a look. We do, Professor De Vera finally answers. But the delay would show a lag in the timing of their information, correct? Rhiannon continues. The outpost was only empty for what, a few days?
5 days, to be precise, Markham answers. And this attack occurred 8 days after it was reoccupied.
His gaze skates over mine, then lifts to the rows above.
The Poromiel trading post nearby, Resen, was leveled by Poromish unrest a couple of weeks ago. And we think that may be helping disrupt their communication lines about our outpost.
Poromish unrest? Power rises within me so quickly that my skin heats. De Vera glances sideways at Markham.
We also don't usually give you the answers.
Markham chuckles and dips his head.
My apologies, Professor De Vera. I must not be at my best today. Too little sleep in the last few days.
Happens to the best of us. I raise my hand and De Vera calls on me.
Where in the outpost were the Griffin Riders found?
Near the armory. Shit, I nod. They were raiding the outpost for weapons. Our wards might not reach that far, but I'd bet my life a cache of daggers was moved there if leadership knew Venon were in the vicinity. Brennan can't supply even a fraction of the drifts. Of course they're going to fight to steal weaponry. We need to smuggle more out.
What would you do were you in command of the riot at the Afbeen outpost?
She asks the room, then calls on Caroline Ashton when she raises her hand.
I'd double the patrol for the next few weeks in a show of force, and maybe consider raising a few Poromish border villages. She suggests.
Rhiannon scoffs quietly.
Remind me to never get on her bad side, Riddick mutters.
In retaliation, Dane interrupts, that's not our way. Read the codex about the rules of engagement, Ashton.
Says the man who sent me to my death.
He's right, De Vera agrees. We defend our borders with lethal force, but we don't take war to civilians.
We just don't bother saving them either. But does she know that?
Shit, can I trust anyone around here?
But
Maybe the whole report is wrong. Maybe it was Wyvern and Venon attacking, not griffins. Maybe this entire presentation is a well-crafted lie. How many riders were wounded in the Athbean attack, given that one was killed? I ask. 4 of us, Devera answers, pointing at her arm. Including me. This is courtesy of a rider with an excellent aim of her bow. So much for the not griffin idea. We're excused after another half hour of current events, and I ditch my squad in the crowd searching out Bodhi. He's nearly to the steps of the briefing room before I catch up to him. Sorengil? He asks after we make it through the bottleneck of the doors. I want to help, I whisper. Maybe I can do more than just read. For fuck's sake. He takes my elbow and pulls me into an alcove, towering over me with a look of exasperation. I have direct instructions to keep you as far away from helping as possible. He's not even here and he's still giving you orders? I adjust the strap of my bag on my shoulder as most of the quadrant funnels past. That tactic isn't going to work on me, because yes. He shrugs and scratches a pen into the cast on his arm. And I thought you were the most reasonable of the group, I sigh. Look, if I can help, then maybe we can prevent what I'm assuming are supply runs? Talking in code is ridiculous, but anyone could be listening. Give me a job. Oh, I am the most reasonable in the group. He flashes a grin, leaning back on his heels. I also don't have a death wish. Survive second year and strengthen your shield, Sorengil. That's your job.
She trying to talk you into letting her join the shenanigans? Imogen asks, stopping alongside us. Trying is the precise word, Bodhi says.
Only trying.
He walks off into the crowd.
How are we expected to go back to class like nothing happened?
I ask Imogen, as we walk out into the flow of cadets headed for the main staircase of the academic wing.
You're supposed to act like nothing happened, Imogen says quietly, waving at Quinn, who's waiting ahead with Rhiannon. That's the deal we all made when we came here.
She moves her bag, twisting her wrist so her rebellion relic is front and center between us.
And like it or not, you're one of us now.
Well, as close as you can get without one of these. I shift my heavy pack on my shoulder and nod, realizing I know too little to actually help the marked ones and too much to speak frankly to my friends. Hey, Imogen says to Quinn, lunch?
Absolutely, Quinn answers.
The two walk ahead while Rhiannon falls back to keep pace with me.
Doesn't Quinn usually eat lunch with her girlfriend?
Rhi asks.
Yes, but she graduated.
Right. She sighs and lowers her voice. I wanted to talk to you before breakfast, but didn't get a chance. I think the school is hiding something from us.
I nearly trip over my own boots, but catch my balance before I can make a fool out of myself.
I'm sorry? She can't know. She just can't. I barely survived losing Liam. I can't fathom anything happening to her. I think there's something going on in the healer quadrant, she says, lowering her voice. I tried to take a first year to see Nolan yesterday after formation turned into a fire pit, and he looks like absolute shit. I mean, the man could barely stand. And when I went to ask him if he was all right, the new vice commandant said he had more important things to do than talk to cadets and basically escorted him to that little door in the back of the infirmary, which is now guarded. I think they're hiding something back there.
I open and shut my mouth a couple of times, torn between confusion and relief.
Maybe they brought some of the injured riders from one of the outposts for mending, I offer.
The backlog would explain why Bodhi is still in a cast.
She shakes her head. Since when do a few broken bones wreck a mender?
Maybe they brought in a prisoner from Poromiel.
Riddick forces his way in between us, and Nolan keeps healing them as Varish breaks them. I heard one of the third years say that's what Varish is known for. Torture.
And you're known for eavesdropping,
Rhys shakes her head. Instead of eating lunch with my friends, I make a quick excuse and take my tray to the little library alcove in Commons to finish reading United Navarre, A Study in Survival. Sadly, after an hour hunched over the tome, I realize I already know most of the facts it regurgitates about the triumph of unification and the sacrifices made by both humans and dragons to establish peace. Disappointment stings like a paper cut. Naturally, the secrets of ward building weren't going to be in the first book I researched, but it would have been a pleasant surprise for something to be easy. I contemplate asking Jacinia for a volume more focused on the first 6 riders as I change for assessment back in my room, then head to the gym and meet my squad on the edge of the mat. I hate assessment day, I mutter, taking the spot between Rhee and Nadine. Can't blame you after the way yours went last year, Riddick teases as he steps up next to Sawyer. The first match begins between 2 of our first years, and I can't help but notice Rhee glancing my way every few minutes. By the end, Vissia, the repeat, has trampled the brutish girl with shocking red curls who'd thrown up on Arik yesterday, and Rhee's all but frowning at me. And she's not the only one. Sloane is staring like she might actually be capable of glaring me to death as she shifts her weight continuously on the left side of the mat.
Baylor Norris and Misha Levin, Professor Emeterio, our squad's combat teacher, shouts at the first years behind Sloane, then tilts his shaved head down at the clipboard in his beefy hands. Shit, I really didn't want to know their names. The stocky guy with nervous eyes faces off against the brunette who couldn't stop biting her nails yesterday. You all right? I ask Rhee as the brunette somehow flips the muscly one onto his back. Impressive.
Should I be asking you that? Rhee responds, lowering her voice to a whisper. Are you mad at me?
What? I rip my attention from the way the girl is handing that guy his ass to look at her. Why would I be mad at you?
Between the running and not eating lunch with us, it kind of feels like you're avoiding me. And it's ridiculous, but all I can think is that maybe you're pissed that I chose Sawyer as an executive officer yesterday instead of you. And if that's the case, then let's talk about it. Wait, what? No, I shake my head, my hand holding my stomach. Not at all. I am the worst possible choice for executive officer, considering I have to fly off to Samara every 2 weeks so Taryn can see Sigale. Right? She nods, relief softening her brown eyes. That was exactly my thought. Sawyer is a great choice, and I have 0 aspirations to leadership. I'm only trying to get by unnoticed over here. Not mad in the least. So you're not avoiding me? Rhee asks.
I would have made a kick-ass executive officer, Nadine interrupts, saving me from having to answer. But at least you didn't choose Riddick. He would have seen the whole thing as a platform to crack more jokes.
Guess we're not being as quiet as we think we are. Misha firmly trounces Baylor, and Emeterio calls the next pair to the mat.
Sloane Mari and, he reads from his roll, Arik Greycastle.
I want her instead, Sloane says, pointing a dagger at me.
She has to be kidding, but she's not. Sighing, I cross my arms and shake my head at Liam's little sister.
God, Sloane, Imogen snorts, laughing off to the right, where she watches with Quinn.
You really feel like dying on your first day?
Did she compliment you? Rhiannon whispers. Oddly enough, I think so.
I can take her, Sloane fires back, white-knuckling her knife. From what your letter said last year, her joints pop right out. How hard can it be?
Seriously? I shoot a reproachful look at Imogen.
I can explain, Imogen puts her hand over her heart. You see, I didn't like you last year, remember? You're kind of an acquired taste.
Great, I appreciate that, I quip back sarcastically.
I couldn't care less about whatever grudge you think you hold against Sorengale Mari.
Emeterio sighs like this year has already exhausted him.
I know who trained her, and I'm not unleashing her on a first year.
He lifts a dark brow at Imogen.
I, too, made an error last year.
He turns back to Sloane, the corners of his mouth slashing down.
Now, disarm and take your place against Greycastle.
Sloane hands off her weapons and faces Arik, who easily has about 5 inches and years of private combat tutoring on her. But she's Liam's sister, so there's a chance she'll be able to hold her own.
Did someone say Sorengale?
A deep voice asks from behind us. Our line of second years all glance over shoulders at the bullish first year who threw the scrawny one off the parapet. There's a second wing patch on his shoulder as he lumbers forward, his hands at his sides.
Popular today, aren't you?
Nadine whispers with a smile, pivoting playfully toward the first year.
Hi, I'm Violet Sorengale. She points to her purple hair. See, like my hair, do you have a message for—
He grabs hold of her head and twists, snapping her neck. An excerpt from Official Notice from Commandant Panchek to General Sorengale. It is not unheard of that a candidate enters the Rider's Quadrant having been paid to assassinate a cadet. I'm sorry Mira was targeted, but proud to say she dispatched the threat quickly.
You have enemies, General.
Chapter 10. I stare in shock for the length of a heartbeat as the first year drops Nadine's body to the ground. It falls with a sickening thud, her head twisted at an unnatural angle.
She's dead. No, not again.
Nadine! Rhiannon yells, rushing to kneel at her side.
Nadine? The first year asks, his thick eyebrows knitting into one.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Emeterio barks.
No one interferes, I demand, and two of my daggers are in hand before I even realize I've reached for them. The giant jerks his gaze from Nadine's body to my daggers to my hair. I'm Violet Sorengale. My heart pounds, but no one else will die in my name. Using a pinch grip, I don't wait for his response, flinging both daggers. But he's fast for someone his size and throws up his arms, where both my blades sink to the hilt. Damn it.
Violet! Andarna shouts. Sleep! I slam my shields up to block everything, everyone out.
Zayden's gone. Protecting me is what killed Liam. It doesn't matter why this guy is trying to kill me right now. Either I'm strong enough to survive or I'm not. The first year rips the bloodied daggers out of his forearms in quick succession with an angry grunt, letting them clatter to the ground. His mistake. He might be almost a foot taller, but he'll need those blades if he wants to kill me. His build, though, that's going to be hard to overcome.
Stop going for bigger moves that expose you.
Zayden's words from last year ring in my head as if he's standing right beside me. I have to use what I have, my speed, to my advantage. I charge toward him at a run, and he swings meaty fists at my head, but I drop to my knees before they can make contact. Ignoring the shattering pain in my legs from impact, I use my momentum to slide by, clipping the tendons along his knees as I pass. He yells and falls forward like a fucking tree slamming into the floor.
Violet! Dane shouts from somewhere behind me. I scramble to my feet and turn back to the giant, who has already flipped himself onto his back as if impervious to pain, but he can't stand with what I've done to him. He can, however, reach for one of the daggers he dropped and throw it at me, which he does. Shit! I spin sideways to avoid my own blade, and he kicks out with the leg I didn't slice. His boot catches me behind my thigh. The blow cuts my feet out from under me, and all I can see is ceiling as I fall back, smashing my hip with the full force of my weight. Pain blinds me for a heartbeat when my head smacks against the floor, white hot and so sharp my ears ring. But at least I haven't stabbed myself with my blades. One is still in my hand, but my eyes blur and tell me it's really two. The first year grabs hold of my right thigh and pulls, dragging me with the distinct squeaking sound of leather against the shiny floor. If I put my dagger through his hand, I'll strike my own muscle. So I swipe out at his arm instead, my reach only catching him with a cut across the forearm. My heart launches into my throat as people around me yell my name, but they can't interfere.
I'm a second year, and this asshole isn't my squad. His grip's secure. He drags me feet first toward him, his puddled blood soaking the back of my neck and wetting my hair. If I don't get free, I'm dead. I bring up my left leg and kick as soon as I'm close enough, catching him in the jaw, but he doesn't let go, tenacious bastard. A crunch sounds with my next kick, breaking his nose. Blood flies, but he shakes it off, lurching upward and rolling onto me, pinning me to the floor with his incomprehensible weight. Fuck, fuck, fuck! I swing out with my knife, but he catches my right hand, pinning my wrist to the ground. Then he wraps his other hand around my throat and squeezes. Fucking die already, he seethes, his voice blending into the ringing in my ears as he lowers his face to mine. There's no air as his grip tightens on my windpipe. Secrets die with the people who keep them, he whispers, bringing his nose an inch from mine. His eyes are light brown but rimmed in red as though he's on some kind of drug. Atos. Fear floods my mind, breaking past my shields, but it's not mine. I can't focus on Tarn's fear. That way lies shock and death. And I'm not about to die under some no-name first year. My vision tunnels as I grab one of the daggers sheathed along my ribs with my free left hand. Draw quickly and plunge the blade into the giant's back, angling right where Zayden taught me. His kidney. Once. Twice. Thrice. I lose count as I stab over and over and over until the grip on my throat releases, until the first year sags on top of me. He's dead weight. My lungs fight to expand as I put the last of my strength into shoving him off of me. He's heavier than an ox, but I manage to push him sideways enough to slide out from under him. Air. Beautiful, precious air fills my chest, and I gasp for it, breathing past the fire in my throat and stare up at the beams of the ceiling. Pain. My entire body is nothing but pain. Violet? Dane's voice shakes as he crouches beside me. Are you all right? Secrets die with the people who keep them. No, I'm not all right. His father just tried to have me assassinated. I force myself to the familiar headspace beyond the pain and roll to my hands and knees. Nausea sweeps through me in waves, and I breathe in through my nose and out through my mouth until I can push it back down. Say something, Dane begs in a frantic whisper. I walk back on my hands until I'm kneeling, then arch my neck, wincing as I pull breath after breath. Vi, he stands and offers me a hand, and the worry in his familiar eyes. Fuck, no. I throw all my energy into my shields. Don't touch me, I grind out, my voice like sandpaper, and stand slowly, more than aware of the number of eyes on me. My head spins, but I fight the dizziness as I retrieve all five of my daggers. Everyone in the nearby area watches as I bend over and use the dead first year's uniform to wipe the blood off my blades before sheathing them. The fear flooding my pathways changes to relief. I'm all right, I tell Taryn and Andarna. Mateus and Henrik, take the bodies, Dane orders. At least I think it's him. The ringing in my ears muffles everything farther than 12 inches away. A Materio appears before me. May I touch you? He asks. Clearly, I made that demand of Dane rather loudly. I nod, making sure my shields are in place, and A Materio grasps my face, searching my eyes. He blocks the light, then lifts his hand. A fresh wave of nausea churns in my stomach. You're concussed. Want to skip the rest of the session? He drops his hand from my face and holds me steady by gripping my arms when I sway. No, I'm not leaving assessment day the same way I did last year. I've got her, Imogen says, taking my elbow. Emeterio's mouth purses, his dark eyes narrowing. I'm not going to try and kill her this year. Promise. She draws me to her side, but doesn't hold on to me, just lets me lean a little. Fine. A lot. You were just strangled, Cadet Sorengale, Emeterio reminds me. Not the first time, I respond, the razor blades in my throat making my voice raspy. I'll heal. I'm staying. He sighs, but eventually nods and heads back to his place at the head of the mat, picking up the clipboard he'd apparently dropped. Atos sent him, I whisper to Imogen. I think we're being targeted. Gods, I hope that's not why Zayden didn't show yesterday.
Her green eyes flare for a second before Riddick appears at my other side, his shoulder brushing mine.
Damn, Sorengale,
he mutters, offering me an arm I don't take.
It's always something, isn't it?
I try to smile as the two of them walk slowly back to the edge of the mat, giving me enough support that I don't fall to either side.
He was probably sent as a message to your mother, Emeterio says, shaking his head. Same thing happened to your older sister during her years.
The first years stare in wide-eyed horror as I glance around the bloody mat, noting that Rhiannon, Dane, and Sawyer are missing.
Right, because they have to take Nadine and the nameless first year's body.
Nadine is dead because she said she was me. Heavy, eye-prickling sorrow threatens to take me out at my throbbing knees. But I can't allow myself to feel it. Can't let it in. Not with everyone watching. It goes into the box where I keep every other overwhelming emotion.
Sloane and Arik stand in the middle of the mat, watching me with varying shades of shock on their face. There's far more concern on Arik's face than Sloane's.
Is someone going to clean up that mess and fight or what?
I ask, ignoring the drip of thick liquid down the back of my neck. Standing here, covered in his blood, is better than lying there, soaked in mine.
And you wanted to take her on, Mari,
one of the first years scoffs from across the mat. He has deep-set brown eyes under angular brows and a wide, square jaw. But I don't know his name. I don't fucking want to know his name. I already know Sloane's and Arik's. And that's too much. I knew Nadine's.
We stand shoulder to shoulder as the first years mop up the blood, then finish their assessment.
And I focus on cataloging every single thing that's wrong with Sloane's fighting style, which is a lot. In fact, she looks like she's spent nearly no time training for the quadrant.
That can't be right. Liam was the best fighter in our year, and every marked one knows they have to report to the Riders' Quadrant when they're of age. Surely she's trained.
You sure she's Liam's sister? Riddick asks.
Yep,
Imogen answers with a long sigh.
But she sure wasn't fostered with fighters, and it shows. Arik puts her on her ass 6 times with little to no effort.
Well, shit. This complicates some things, like keeping her alive. An hour later, I make it through physics under Rhi's watchful gaze, more than aware of the first year's blood drying on my skin and holding my head high when other cadets stare. It's easier once the ringing in my ears lessens, but I'm still nauseated as hell after class. I beg off from dinner and turn down Rhi's offer of help to get to my room. Slowly but surely, taking the steps up to the second year's floor. Every bone, every muscle, every fiber of my being aches. A heartbeat before I reach for my door handle, I feel it. The familiar, midnight-tinted shadow wrapping around my mind. Relief courses through me as I push open the door and see Zayden leaning against the wall between my desk and my bed, looking ready to kill someone as usual, his arms folded over his chest.
It's been 8 days, I croak, wincing. I know,
he counters, pushing off the wall and crossing the room in a few steps.
And from what Tairn showed Segale, I should have told my commander to fuck off and gotten here sooner.
He takes my face in his hands in a way that feels completely different from the way Emeterio had earlier. And the rage shining in his eyes is at odds with the gentleness of his touch as he takes stock of my injuries.
The blood is his. My throat feels like I swallowed fire. Good.
His jaw flexes as his gaze drops to the bruises I know are around my neck.
I don't even know what his name was. I know.
His hands fall away, and I immediately mourn their loss. Colonel Atos sent him. He nods, the motion curt.
I'm sorry I couldn't kill him first.
The first year or Atos?
Both.
He doesn't smile at my attempt at a joke.
Let's get you clean and wrapped up.
You can't go around killing cadets. You're an officer now.
Watch me.
What's it like at Samara? I ask him hours later, as I sit cross-legged on my bed, bathed and choking down the bowl of soup he brought up for me from the mess in the main campus. Every swallow hurts, but he's right. I can't afford to weaken myself by not eating.
Look at you asking questions.
A corner of Zayden's mouth rises as he leans back, taking over the armchair in the corner of my room, sharpening his daggers on a strap of leather. He ditched the flight leathers while I was in the bath, but he somehow looks even better in his new uniform. I can't help but notice he didn't add patches to this one either. He'd only ever worn his wing leader insignia and wing designation while he was in the quadrant. I'm not fighting with you about your question game tonight. I shoot a glare his way, spotting the two tomes Jacinia loaned me on the bookshelf next to him. But any thought of telling him about my research disappeared at his reminder that I am not granted the full truth when it comes to him. Wanting you to ask what you want to know isn't a game. You and me, not a game. He drags his blade over the leather again and again. And Samara is different. The one-word answers aren't gonna cut it. He looks up from his work. I have to prove myself all over again at what's arguably the cruelest outpost we have. It's annoying. I crack a smile, leave it to Zayden to be annoyed. Do they treat you differently? You mean because of this? He taps the side of his neck with the flat of his blade touching the relic. Yes, he shrugs. I think the last name does it more than the relic. The older riders are easier on Garrick, which I'm thankful for. I set the spoon down in the bowl. I'm sorry. It's nothing worse than what I expected, and my signet's enough to give most of them pause. He puts the leather strap into his rucksack, then sheathes his last blade as he stands. You know what it's like. People judge you by your last name all the time. I think it's safe to say you have it worse.
Only within the borders.
He flips my armor over where it's drying on the back of my desk chair, then crosses the room to sit on the end of my bed. It's not as big as his was last year, but there's room for both of us if I ask him to stay, which I won't. It's hard enough to be this close and not kiss him. Sleeping next to him? I'd break for sure. Fair point. I put the bowl on my nightstand and pick up my brush, my gaze drifting to the door when I hear Rhiannon's voice in the hallway a second before she shuts her door. Which reminds me, did you ward my room from visitors before you left? He nods. It's warded against sound, too. He crosses his ankle over his knee, keeping his boots off my bed. One way, of course. You can hear what's going on out there, but they can't hear what's going on in here. Figured you might like your privacy. For all the people I can't bring in?
You can bring in whomever you want, he counters.
Really? Sarcasm drips from my voice as I drag the brush through my damp hair. Because Rhiannon tried to walk in and ended up on the other side of the hallway. The corners of his mouth lift into a glimpse of a smile. Tell her to hold your hand next time. The only way in here is by touching you. Wait. I pause, then finish pulling the brush through my snagged ends. So you didn't ward it for only you and me?
It's your room, Violet.
His eyes track the movement of the brush through my hair, and the way his fingers curl in his lap makes me swallow. Hard.
The room is warded to let in whomever you pull through.
He clears his throat and shifts his weight as I finish another pass with the brush.
And selfishly me. fucking love your hair. If you ever want to bring me to my knees or win at an argument, just let it down. I'll get the point.
My breath catches at the memory. Has it really only been a few months since he said that? It feels simultaneously like forever and yesterday.
You warded my room for complete privacy for me and anyone I want to bring in. I lift my eyebrows at him. In case I feel like
doing whatever you want.
The heat in his gaze makes my breath catch.
No one will hear a thing, even if you wreck an armoire.
I fumble the brush and it falls into my lap, but I quickly recover. Kind of.
This particular one seems pretty solid, nothing like the flimsy piece I had in my room last year. The one we accidentally turned into firewood the first time we'd gotten our hands on each other.
Is that a challenge? He glances at the furniture. Because I guarantee we can take it down once you're healed.
No one's ever fully healed around here.
Good point.
Just say the words, Violet. The way he looks at me is enough to raise my temperature a few degrees.
It only takes three.
Three words?
Oh, like hell am I going to tell him that I want him. He already has too much power over me. Can and should are two different things, I manage to say. My willpower when it comes to Zayden is pure shit. One touch, and I'll be back in his arms, accepting whatever he deems as enough of the truth, instead of the full access I deserve. No need. And we definitely shouldn't.
Then tell me how your week was instead.
He changes topics smoothly.
I couldn't watch them all.
I admit. At Parapet. I tried, but I
couldn't.
You were on the tower? His brow furrows.
Yes, I shift, tucking my sore knees to the side. I promised Liam I'd help Sloane, and I couldn't do that from the courtyard.
A sarcastic laugh escapes my lips.
And she fucking hates me.
It's impossible to hate you.
He stands and walks to where his rucksack is leaned up against the wall.
Trust me. I tried.
Trust me, she does. She actually wanted to challenge me at assessment. I lean back against my headboard. She blames me for Liam's death.
Not that she's wrong. Liam's death wasn't your fault. He interrupts, his body going rigid.
It was mine. If Sloane wants to hate anyone, she can aim it all right here.
He taps his chest as he turns, setting his rucksack on the desk.
It wasn't your fault.
It's not the first time we've had the argument, and something tells me it won't be the last. I guess there's enough guilt for two to carry.
It was.
He opens the top and rifles through the bag. Zayden.
How many candidates fell this year?
He pulls out a folded paper, then closes the bag.
Too many.
Even now I can hear some of their screams.
It's always too many.
He sits on my bed again, this time close enough that my knees brush his thigh.
And it's okay that you couldn't watch the younger ones die. It means you're still you.
As opposed to turning into someone else? My stomach twists at the flat expression on his face, the wall mentioning Liam's death put solidly between us.
Because I feel like I am.
I don't even want to know the first year's names.
I don't want to know them. I don't want it to hurt when they die.
What does that make me?
A second year?
He says it matter-of-factly, the same way he'd declared that he couldn't save every marked one last year, only the ones willing to help themselves.
Sometimes I forget how ruthless he is.
How ruthless he can be on my behalf.
I've seen death before. I respond. I was practically surrounded by it last year.
It's not the same thing.
Seeing our friends, our equals, die on the gauntlet, at threshing, in challenges, or even in battle is one thing.
Everyone in here is just fighting to survive, and it prepares us for what happens out there. But when it's the younger candidates?
He shakes his head and leans forward. I grip my brush to keep from reaching for him.
The first year is when some of us lose our lives, he says softly, tucking my damp hair behind my ear. The second year is when the rest of us lose our humanity. It's all part of the process of turning us into effective weapons. And don't forget for a second, that's the mission here.
Desensitizing us to death?
He nods.
A knock sounds at the door, and I startle but can't help but notice Zayden doesn't. He sighs and stands, heading for the door.
Already? He asks after opening it, blocking me from view, or blocking the view from me.
Already. I recognize Bodhi's voice.
Give me a minute.
Zayden shuts the door without waiting for a response. Let me come with you. I swing my feet over the side of the bed.
No.
He crouches in front of me, putting us at eye level, the parchment from his bag still clutched in his fist.
Sleep is the fastest way to heal, unless you plan on seeking out Nolan, and from what I hear, he's hard to come by these days.
You need sleep too, I protest, around the dread filling my throat. We only have hours, and I'm not ready for him to go. You flew for half a day.
I have a lot to get done before morning.
Let me help.
Shit, now I'm begging. Not yet.
He reaches out to cup my face, then drops his hand as if rethinking the move.
But I need you to pay close attention to what happens when you leave in 7 days with Tarn.
He presses the paper into my hand.
Until then, here.
What is this? I spare a glance downward. But it only looks like folded parchment.
You told me once that I was scared you might not like me if you got to really know me.
I remember.
Every time we're together, we're training or fighting.
There's not a lot of time for long walks by the river or whatever passes for romance around here. He squeezes my hand gently, but I can feel every callus he's built from mastering his weaponry.
But I told you I'd find a way to let you in, and right now, this is all I have.
My gaze jerks to his, and my heart flies into my throat.
I'll see you at Samara.
He stands and grabs his rucksack, and the two swords leaned up against the wall next to the door. How do I find you once I'm there? My fingers clench the folded parchment. I've never even seen Samara. Mom has never been stationed there. He turns at the door and looks back at me, holding my gaze. Third floor, south wing, second door on the right. The wards will let you in.
His barracks room.
Let me guess, warded for sound and to let in you, me, and anyone you tug through? The idea of him using that soundproofing for breaking armoires with someone else is enough to curdle the soup in my stomach. We might not be together, but jealousy is not exactly a rational emotion.
No, Violet.
He lifts both swords overhead, then slips them into the sheaths on the pack behind him, with practiced expertise and a hint of a smirk.
Just you and me.
He's gone before I can even think of a reply. With trembling hands, I unfold the paper and smile. Zayden Ryerson wrote me a letter.
An excerpt from Recovered Correspondence of Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson to Cadet Violet Sorengale. Garrick has always been my best friend. His father was my father's aide, which, in a way, makes him my Dane, except trustworthy. After Liam, Bodhi was and still is the closest thing I have to a brother, perpetually tagging along a step behind. Chapter 11. A smile curving my lips, I brace my hands on the top of my head and walk off the stitch in my side as Imogen and I finish our post-run cool-down a few mornings later, entering the courtyard a full half hour before breakfast is set to be served. He wrote me a letter, and I've read it so many times, I already have it memorized. There is nothing remotely dangerous in it. No secrets of the revolution or clues on how to help. But it's not like he can risk those by putting them in writing. No, this is even better. It's just about him. It's little details, like the fact that he used to sit on the roof of Ryerson House during the rebellion in hopes his father would come home and tell him it was over. "You've been grinning like a drunkard for the last 3 mornings, Imogen complains, ducking to check under the dais as we pass by. How is anyone that happy at sunrise? Can't blame her. I've been on edge since assessment day 2. So are Bodhi and Aya. No nightmares the last few days, and no one's up at this hour trying to kill me. My hands fall to my side. I made it a little farther between walking breaks this time. Yeah, because that's the reason, she rolls her neck. Why don't you take him back already? He doesn't trust me, I shrug. And I can't really trust him, it's complicated. But damn, do I miss catching glimpses of him every day. Saturday can't get here soon enough. Besides, even if two people have unmatched chemistry, that doesn't mean they should be in a relationship beyond anything physical. Oh, no, she shakes her head, then tucks a strand of pink hair behind her ear. I was finishing a conversation, not starting one. I'm down for running and weight training with you, but you have friends to talk about your sex life with. Remember the ones I'm watching you actively avoid at every opportunity? Not going there. And we aren't friends? I question. Her face scrunches. Co-conspirators with a vested interest in keeping each other alive. That only makes me smile bigger. Oh, don't go getting soft on me now. Her gaze narrows as she looks past me toward the outer wall. What in Dune's name would a scribe be doing in the quadrant at this hour? I startle at the sign of Jacinia waiting in one of the shadowed alcoves, tucked away like she's trying to hide. Relax, she's a friend. Imogen dishes out a heaping dose of side-eye. You're pretty much hiding from the second years but befriending scribes. I'm distancing myself so I don't have to lie to them. And I've been friends with just, you know what, I don't owe you an explanation. I'm going to see what my friend needs. I increase my pace, but Imogen matches it. Hi, I sign to Jacinia as we near the alcove. This particular one has a tunnel that leads straight into the dormitory. Everything all right? I came to find you. Her brow puckers under her hood as her gaze shifts to Imogen, who's sizing her up like she would an opponent. I'm fine, I tell Imogen, signing at the same time. Jacinia isn't going to try to kill me. Imogen tilts her head, her gaze dropping to the cream satchel Jacinia carries. I'm not going to try to kill her, Jacinia signs, her brown eyes widening. I wouldn't even know how.
Violet knew how to kill just fine on a scribe's education, Imogen replies, her hands moving quickly.
Jacinia blinks. I lift my brows at Imogen.
Fine, she replies, signing as she backs away. But if she comes at you with a sharpened quill, don't blame me.
Sorry about her, I sign once Imogen turns her back to us. People are trying to kill you? Jacinia's brow knits. It's Thursday. I move into the alcove so my back isn't to the courtyard. I'm always happy to see you, but what can I help you with?
Scribe cadets almost never enter the writer's quadrant unless they're assisting Captain Fitzgibbons.
Two things, she signs as we both sit on the bench, then reaches into her satchel, pulls out a tome, and hands it to me. It's a copy of The Gift of the First Six, and looks to be hundreds of years old.
You said you wanted an early accounting of the first riders when you returned the other books, she signs. This is one of the earliest I could find that's allowed to be removed from the archives. Preparing for another debate? I set it on my lap and choose my words carefully. My gut tells me I can trust her, but after Dane, I'm not sure I can depend on my intuition, and knowing isn't safe for her anyway. Studying. And thank you, but you didn't have to bring it. I would have come to you. I didn't want you to have to wait for me to be on archives duty, and you told me you run every morning. She takes several deep breaths, which usually means she's composing her thoughts. And I hate to admit it, but I need help, she signs before pulling a ragged tome out of the bag and handing it to me. I take it to free up her hands, noting the worn edges and loose spine. I'm trying to translate this for an assignment, and I'm struggling with a couple of sentences. It's an old Lucerish, and from what I remember, it's one of the dead languages you can read. Her cheeks flush pink as she glances back over her shoulder at the mage-lit tunnel, as if another scribe might see us. I'll be in trouble if anyone knows I'm asking for help. Adepts shouldn't ask. I'm good at keeping secrets, I sign, my face falling as I remember using the language to pass secret messages with Dane when we were kids. Thank you. I know almost every other language. Her motions are sharp and her mouth tenses. You know far more of them than I do. We share a smile, and I flip open the tome to the bookmark, taking in the swirling strokes of ink that make up the logosyllabic language. Jacinia points to a sentence. I'm stuck here. I quickly read from the beginning of the paragraph to be sure I have it right. Then sign the sentence she's looking for, spelling out the last word, the name of an ancient king who lived 1,000 years before Navarre existed. Thank you, she writes the sentence down in the notebook she's brought with her. Ancient king. I flip to the first page of the book and my shoulders sag. It bears a date from 25 years ago. It's hand-copied from an original, Jacinia signs, about 5 years before the Quadrant received the printing press.
Right, because nothing in the archives is older than 400 years, except the scrolls from the Unification.
Sweat cools on the back of my neck as I translate a few more sentences for her from various pages, surprised at how much I still remember after not practicing for a year, then hand the tome back when I finish the last sentence she has marked. If I hurry, I can bathe the sweat off and still catch breakfast. We're working on removing all the dead languages from the public section of the archives and translating them for easier reading, she signs with an excited smile, then puts her things away. You should come by and see how much we've accomplished.
Riders aren't allowed past the study table, I remind her.
I'd make an exception for you, she grins.
The archives are almost always empty on Sundays, especially with most third years cycling home for break. A scream rends the air and my head shoots up. Across the courtyard, a second year from third wing is dragged from the academic building between two older riders, followed by Professor Markham.
What in Amari's name?
Jacinia pales and sinks farther into the shadows of the alcove as he's hauled into the dormitory building, where the tunnels beneath lead across the canyon and into the main campus of Bezgaeth.
I think, she signs, starting to breathe raggedly, I think that's my fault.
What? I turn to face her fully.
That writer requested a book yesterday, and I recorded the request.
She leans toward me, panic growing in her eyes.
I have to record the requests. It's
regulation. We both finish signing at the same time. I nod.
You didn't do anything wrong. What was the book?
She glances toward the doors where the rider disappeared.
I should go. Thank you.
It's only the fear in her eyes that keeps me from asking her again before she rushes off, leaving me staring at the tome in my lap, realizing how dangerous my research project really is.
Wait for me, Rhiannon calls out later that day, jogging up through the crowd of riders as we reach the steps beside the gauntlet, where most of us are bottlenecked as we wait for our turn to climb up to the flight field.
We're still here, I wave before my gaze returns to moving restlessly over the people closest to us, watching their hands, their weapons. I trust my squad mates implicitly, but no one else. All it takes is a well-timed stab in a crowd, and I could bleed out without even knowing who'd killed me.
This isn't right, Sawyer mutters, refolding our homework map for RSC.
I can't get number 4 no matter how many times I count the little elevation lines.
That's north, I tell him, tapping the bottom of the folded monstrosity. You're looking at the wrong sector for question 4. Trust me. I had to ask Riddick for help last night.
Ugh, this is some infantry bullshit. He moved the map into his pocket.
Why won't you just accept that I am a land navigation god and ask for help like everyone else? Riddick teases Sawyer as Ree catches up to us.
Finally, you'd think leadership would be on time.
Leadership was in a meeting. Ree replies, holding up a collection of missives. And leadership was given the mail. Hope leaps up, replacing the hypervigilance for a second before I can squash it.
Riddick, Rhiannon says, handing over a letter. Sawyer, she turns, giving him the next one.
Me, she flips that one to the back.
And Violet.
He wouldn't. I remind myself before taking the letter from her, yet I can't help but hold my breath as I open the unsealed flap of the envelope.
Violet, sorry it took me so long to write. I only just realized the date. You're a second year.
My shoulders droop, which is just pathetic. Who's it from? Rhiannon asks. You look disappointed.
Mira, I answer, and no, not disappointed. My words trail off as we move forward in line.
You thought it would be a different lieutenant? She guesses correctly, her eyes softening in sympathy. I shrug, but it's hard to keep the frustration out of my voice.
I know better.
You miss him, don't you? She drops her voice as we shuffle closer to the steps. I nod. I shouldn't, but I do.
Are you two together? She whispers. I mean, everyone knows you're sleeping together, but something's off with you.
I glance ahead, making sure Sawyer and Riddick are engrossed in their letters. This is a truth I can easily give her. Not anymore.
Why? She asks, confusion etching her forehead. What happened?
I open my mouth and shut it. Maybe the truth isn't that easy. What the hell am I supposed to tell her?
Gods, when did this all become so complicated?
You can tell me, you know. She forces a smile, and the hurt I see behind it makes me feel like total and complete shit.
I know. Lucky for me, we start up the steps, giving me a chance to think.
We reach the top, walking into the box canyon of the flight field, and my heart swells at the sight of the dragons organized in the same formation we stand at in the courtyard. It's a beautiful, terrifying, humbling kaleidoscope of power that steals the breath from my lungs.
This is never going to get old, is it?
Rhiannon says as we follow Riddick and Sawyer across the formation, her smile overtaking her face.
I don't think so.
We share a look, and I break. Zayden wasn't honest with me, I say quietly, feeling like I owe my best friend something true. I had to end it. Her eyes flare.
He lied?
No. My grip tightens on Mira's letter. He didn't tell me the entire truth. He still won't.
Another woman? Her brows rise. Because I will absolutely help you annihilate that shadow-wielding asshole if you guys were exclusive and he...
No, I laugh. Nothing like that. We pass by Second Wing's dragons. It's... There go my words again.
It's complicated.
How are you and Tara? I haven't seen her around much. She sighs. Neither of us has enough time for the other. It sucks, but maybe it will ease up next year when neither of us are squad leaders anymore.
Or maybe you'll be wing leaders.
The thought makes me bite back a smile. Ree would be a fantastic wing leader.
Maybe. There's a bounce to her step. But in the meantime, we're free to see whoever we want. What about you? Because if you're single, I have to say that a couple of the guys in Second Wing somehow got hotter after war games. Her eyes sparkle.
Or we could secretly visit Shantara this weekend and hook up with some infantry cadets.
She holds up a finger.
Healers might be all right, too, but I draw the line at scribes. The robes don't do it for me. Not that I'm judging, if that's your thing. I'm just saying that we are second years and our options for blowing off steam are endless.
A random stranger might be what I need to flush Zayden out of my system, but it isn't what I want.
She studies my face like I'm a puzzle that needs to be solved as we continue down the field.
Shit. You're hung up on him.
I sigh. It's complicated.
You said that already.
She tries to school her expression, but I catch the flash of disappointment when I don't elaborate.
Mira, have anything to say about the front?
Not sure. I glance through the letter, reading it quickly. She's been reassigned to Athbean. She says the food is only a step above our mother's cooking. That gets a laugh out of me as I flip the page over, but it dies quickly when I see the thick black lines that eliminate entire paragraphs.
What the?
I flip to the next page, finding more of the same before she signs off, hoping to fly over to Samara during one of my upcoming trips.
What's wrong?
Rhiannon looks up from her own letter as we continue walking, passing by Third Wing's dragons.
I think it's been redacted. I flash it at her so she can see the black lines, then look around to make sure no one else notices.
Someone censored your letter? She looks surprised. Someone read your letter.
It was unsealed. I stuff it back into the envelope.
Who would do that?
Melgren, Varish, Markham, anyone on Atos's orders. My mother. The options are endless.
I'm not sure.
It's not a lie, not really. I slip the envelope into the internal pocket of my flight leathers and then cringe as I button up the jacket. It's too fucking hot for these things down here, but I know I'll be grateful for the extra layer in a few minutes once we're airborne. A red in the second row huffs a blast of steam in warning at a cadet from Third Wing who gets too close, and we all hurry along. Taren is the largest dragon on the field by far, and he looks completely and utterly bored as he waits for me, the metal of my saddle glistening against his scales in the sun. I can't help but sigh in disappointment that Andarna isn't with him as his forelegs come into view.
Hey, has Taren said anything about another black dragon in the Vale?
Riddick asks me over his shoulder as we make it past Kloss section, coming to Taren first, who's standing in the lead position despite Rhiannon and Sawyer outranking me. It's all I can do to not trip over my feet.
I'm sorry?
I know, it sounds ludicrous, but when we walked by Kaori back there, I swear I heard him say something about another black dragon being spotted. That guy was practically jumping with excitement.
Taren?
If the professor of dragonkind knows about Andarna, we're screwed.
Only a few dragons saw her before she entered the caves for the dreamless sleep. You try keeping her hidden and see how it goes for you. Awesome.
Maybe it's Taren they're seeing, I say to Riddick, not a lie.
Or an elder?
Kaori thinks it's a new one. His eyebrows rise.
You should ask him.
Huh, I swallow. Yeah, I can do that. Still not lying. The three continue on mounting their dragons. Taren dips his left shoulder for me, but then straightens.
On your left, he warns as a shape approaches from behind.
I whip around quickly to face the threat and secure my shields in place. Varish saunters toward me, his arms locked behind his back, and the major must be inhuman because there's not a dot of sweat on his high forehead.
Ah, Sorengale, there you are.
As if Taren is hard to miss.
Major Varish, I leave my hands at my thighs, where I can grab hold of my daggers easily, wondering what his signet might be.
I've never seen a signet patch on him. Either he's cocky like Zayden and thinks his reputation precedes him,
or he's part of the classified Signet Club.
Quite the necklace you have there.
He points to the greenish bruises on my throat.
Thank you. It was expensive.
I lift my chin. Cost someone their life.
Ah, that's right. I recall hearing you were nearly done in by a first year.
Good to see that the embarrassment didn't finish the job he started.
But I guess you're probably used to barely squeaking by alive, seeing how frail you're rumored to be.
I officially loathe this man, but at least I know Tarn will eat him whole if he tries to attack me on the field. He leans left, making a show of looking around me.
I thought you were bonded to two dragons?
I am. Sweat slides down my spine.
And yet, I only see one.
He looks up at Tarn.
Where's your little gold one? The feather tail I've heard so much about. I was hoping to see her for myself.
A growl rumbles up Tarn's throat, and he angles his head over me. Saliva drips in giant globs hitting the ground in front of Varish. The Major tenses but maintains a perfect mask of amusement as he steps back.
Always has had a temper, this one.
He likes his space.
I've noticed he likes you to have yours, too, he comments. Tell me, Sorengale, how do you feel about the way he gives you, oh, shall we say, an easier path to take than your fellow cadets?
If you mean to ask how I feel about how he stopped the needless execution of bonded riders by your dragon after Parapet, then I'd have to say that I feel pretty good about it. I guess it takes one bad-tempered dragon to keep another civil.
Remind him that I threatened to digest him alive.
I don't think that would go well for me, I reply.
It would be fun to watch him eat the pompous one.
Endarna's voice is groggy.
Go back to sleep,
I lecture. She's not due to wake for another month, Tarn said. Varish's eyes narrow momentarily on mine, and then he smiles. But there's nothing kind or happy about it.
About your little feather tail.
She can't bear a rider. Not lying, since she hasn't flown since waking in Aracia. I fly with Tarn, but she'll go through maneuvers on the easier days.
Well,
see to it that she flies with you next week, and you can consider that an order. Another growl sounds from Tarn. Dragons don't take orders from humans. Power rises within me, humming beneath my skin and making my fingers buzz.
Of course not.
His grin widens like I've said something funny.
But you do, don't you? Impudent human.
Tarn seethes. I lift my chin, knowing there's nothing more I can say about this without disciplinary action.
It's ironic, don't you think?
Varish asks, retreating one step at a time.
From what Colonel Atos told me, your father was writing a book on feather tails, dragons which hadn't been seen in hundreds of years, and then you ended up bonded to one.
Coincidental, I correct him. The word you meant to say is coincidental.
Is it?
He seems to ponder, backing away and passing by Bodhi.
My stomach turns. Is it? I know nothing of your father's research,
Tarn promises, but Andarna has gone silent.
Riders, Kaori projects his voice across the field as Bodhi reaches my side. Third years have joined us today for a very special reason. They'll be demonstrating a running landing.
He gestures to the sky. Kath is on approach from the west, the red swordtail blocking out the sun for a second as he dives for the field.
He's not slowing down, I murmur.
Part of me hopes Dane falls off.
He will, Bodhi promises.
Just not by much. My jaw slackens,
Dane rides crouched on Kath's shoulder, his arms out for balance as Kath drops to fly level with the field. The beats of Kath's wings slow only slightly the closer he gets, and I hold my breath when Dane slides down Kath's leg to perch on his claw while his dragon is still flying.
Holy shit.
This is unadvisable for you,
Tarn says.
For anyone with a heartbeat, I counter.
Kath flares his wings subtly, enough to drop speed, and Dane jumps as he passes by the professors. He hits the sunburned grass at a run, dispelling the momentum from Kath's flight within a few yards, and comes to a stop. The third years cheer, but Bodhi remains silent at my side.
And that is why Atos is a wing leader, Kaori calls out. Perfect execution. This approach is the most efficient landing for when we need to engage in ground combat. By the time this year is over, you'll be able to land this on any outpost wall. Pay close attention, and you'll be able to complete this safely. Try your own method, and you'll be dead before you hit the ground.
The fuck I will.
Adaptation will be necessary,
Tarn decrees.
For today, we're going to practice the basics of moving from the seat to the shoulder, Kaori instructs.
How are we adapting to that? I ask Tarn.
I didn't say we would, he chuffs. The Dragon Watcher will adapt his request, or I'll have an early lunch.
This maneuver is totally, completely pointless in the kind of war we need to fight.
Kaori doesn't know what's out there, I say softly to Bodhi.
What makes you so sure? He glances my way.
If he did, he'd be teaching us faster ways to get off the damn ground, not land on it.
Tell him that we're still working on the next shipment, Bodhi tells me as we walk through the moonlit flight field a little before midnight a few nights later.
Shipment of what?
I ask, adjusting my pack on my shoulders. He'll know what I'm talking about, he promises, wincing as his fingers graze the dark bruise on his jaw. And tell him it's raw. They've had the forge burning night and day, so we haven't been able to. He flinches. Just tell him it's raw.
I'm starting to feel a lot like a letter. I shoot a glare at him for a second. That's all I'm willing to look away from the uneven terrain for.
There's no chance I'm risking a sprained ankle before a 12-hour flight.
You're the best way of getting information to him, he admits,
without actually knowing anything.
Precisely, he nods. It's safer this way until you're capable of shielding from Atos at all times. Zayden was supposed to continue teaching you last visit, but then I got strangled. At least I've only been attacked once so far this year, but challenges open back up in a week.
Yeah, it kind of fucked with his head. I imagine that dropping dead randomly would have been inconvenient to him, I mutter, half listening.
Shit, challenges open up in a week? It's time to start checking the list the cadre keeps so I can go about my poisoning ways again.
You know it's not like that for him, he says in a lecturing tone that reminds me of Zayden. I've never seen him,
let's not do this,
care like this. No, really, stop. And that includes Catriona. My gaze whips toward him.
Who the hell is Catriona?
He winces and presses his lips in a thin line.
What are the chances that you'll forget I said that between here and Samara?
None. I stumble on a rock, or my feelings, but manage to catch my balance. Physically, at least.